Welcome, everyone. I'm Jeffrey Goodman, Director of Marketing and Development for the YMCA of Northwest Louisiana. And we're here at 318 Latino Studios for Shreveport-Bossier, my city, my community, my home. And can't wait to have today's discussion. Our guests are Vicky and Matt Whitehead with Common Ground. Thanks, y'all, for being here.
Thank you so much. Good to
be here. That right?
You got it. Okay. That's perfect. Perfect.
I felt pressure.
Got to get it right.
All right, y'all. So if I get anything wrong, please correct me, but I think this is right. You are the youth program directors at Common Ground.
That's right.
So my first question is simply, and either of you can talk about this, but tell me how you first got involved with this extraordinary nonprofit.
Well, I guess I'll start. I was made aware of Common Ground around 2008-09, and started serving, and took a couple of years, just to learn what Common Ground was about, what the Cedar Grove community was about. We did a lot of work with homeless encampments and things. I befriended a pastor, who lived in Cedar Grove, and we would start meeting people when they came for the Thursday meal, and I would just find somebody each time and say, "Hey, I want to come to your house this weekend." Now that was an adventure. Because it was an odd thing, at the time, and a kind of a scary thing for folks, to see a white man, just all of a sudden appearing on a Saturday morning. Most people, and justifiably so, would suspect that it's something to do with law enforcement or something.
Let me pause you 1 second, because I'm just curious. I love that. So walk me through one of these conversations. You're meeting someone for the first time, and you're saying, "I want to come." So play it a little bit for me.
First thing that I would always do, if it were a female, a lot of females would come. Not very many young people. So we would be talking about folks in their 30s to 40s, and I would just ask about how their family is doing and so on and so forth. If it were a male, first thing I would do is just say, "How's work going?" And most of the people that came up there obviously didn't have work, but it was just a great intro. And people would start talking about looking for work and things like that. And there would just always be a connection, nothing, specific, but I could just tell when someone would connect, and we would, extend the conversation, talk about how long they lived in Cedar Grove, and eventually I'd just get around to, "Hey, can I come visit you Saturday morning?" And we'd set a time, and, my friend Albert Brown, who was a pastor.
I'm going to stop you one more time. Yep. Sorry. So I'm going to be the person you're – because I think this is – instructive and educational.
Yeah.
So, I'm the person you're trying to get to come to your house you want to come to my house on Saturday. I want to come to your house. Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what I would always, do is just say, "Hey, how's work going? Have you been able to find work lately?"
Yeah, but you want to come to my house. You said you want to come to my house on Saturday. I'm asking you, why do you want to come to my house?
Oh, I'm gonna bring food. We're gonna sit down on the porch and talk and share. And of course, I left out that we're always talking about the gospel. I mean, because we are a faith-based organization, and we're very upfront about that. And so, sharing a meal and talking about faith and God's work in someone's life. The folks in Cedar Grove are always open to that. Mm-hmm. And it might surprise some people, just how close to the gospel, so many people, especially of that age, really are. And so no one's going to say no. Mm-hmm. I never had anyone say no when I said, "I'd like to bring food and let's just, share about what's going on with our lives, what God's doing in our lives." And folks were always receptive. Now, I will say this, the neighbors around would just go in their houses. There were many, many times that I would show up on Saturday and it would be, 9:10 in the morning, and there would be 100 people out on the street. And by the time I got onto the porch with the food, there were zero people on the street.
And why is that?
People are afraid, especially when a white man would come, that it was something to do with the law. We could go on for forever, talking about this fear of law enforcement, but it's just a real thing.
Let me just interrupt one more time. Where does that fearlessness on your part come from? Where does A, the ability to start that conversation to begin with, that fearlessness come from? And then B, where does the fearlessness come from to actually show up by yourself? I assume you're by yourself on a Saturday morning. Where does that come from?
Well, I'm not going to say it was fearless. I was extremely nervous at first. Now, no longer. Vicki and I are probably a little bit too at ease around the community given the amount of shooting that goes on now. But I was afraid, of
so the
reception. It was just out of my comfort zone. But I can tell you what drove me in the first place to go to Common Ground was I was just tired of going to church and never living, the gospel in my life. And since I was 17 years old and started reading the Bible, that was actually my first exposure to the gospel. It was frightening. Because, the gospel asks you to give up so much, at least the way that it read to a 17-year-old, and it was so simple. You just got to leave your own desires behind and follow me. And so that was about the last thing that I wanted to do, but I did want to follow the gospel. I wanted to do what God had asked me to do. And I will be just 100% transparent. I wanted to see if he would show up. And I hate to use, he for God. It's just, I grow up in the South. I'm 66 years old. I don't necessarily mean he. I know God is not a man. But I wanted to know if I was obedient, would God be there? And that's what kept driving me on to do what I was doing and get out of my comfort zone.
Love that. Okay. And you started talking about this a little bit, but Common Ground is doing something this year that very few nonprofits have the opportunity to do, which is celebrate its 20th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Common Ground was founded, I believe, as an outreach program of Grace United Methodist Church to Cedar Grove residents.
That's mm-hmm. right.
So my question is, tell me about Thursday nights mm-hmm. at Common Ground.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of where we started, was going to the meal on Thursday nights. In fact, it was really funny. Well, let me back up and say that we serve a meal. We have chapel service, and folks are encouraged to come to the chapel service, but they can still come to the meal and to the food pantry if they don't come to chapel.
Anybody.
So we have lots of folks there on Thursday nights, upwards. Before COVID, a couple of hundred people, but now it's around 100.
And this is every single Thursday.
And so what started off, so long ago was just in the streets with a table and crock pots. And it's now, we have a kitchen that's been redone. It was an old church, and so that's been gifted to us. And so it's been redone, and we have, it's almost like, to me, I describe it as a restaurant. It's where folks can come and hang out and have a meal together. No pressure. Everybody's just laid back. That meal is cooked by someone that grew up in the neighborhood, and they see that. volunteers. It's covered. We're basically volunteer run. So you've got a lot of people there that are just there because they want to be there. So, you know, when you have that feeling, it's like being in a restaurant. It's everybody's there because they want to be there, you know? So, and they get to see families.
And just orient people. Where are we exactly?
We're on 68, on the corner of 68th and Southern in Shreveport.
Okay, perfect.
Right on the corner.
Okay.
And so then also folks get to go through our pantry. And that's, you know, just to get some basic items that they may need to stock up on in their kitchen. And they have a volunteer take them through that. They're not just handed food. They get to pick out, do I want peas? Do I want corn? What is it that I want? Or something fun that we get from the food bank or from donations from folks that just drop it by and it just happens to be perfect for someone. And so that's our Thursday nights, you know, is chapel and meal and the pantry. And that's how we started. We were just looking for this and started. I started by washing dishes on Thursday night because we hand wash everything. And in fact, I told a volunteer the other night, there was a young lady in there washing the dishes. And I said, be careful. That's how I started, you know. And so that's how
it
we
gets in
really, yeah, it, that's the exact spot.
And what am I going to see if I come there? To age groups, age ranges, ethnicities.
Zero to 100. It is newborns up to the very elderly. So it is all over the place. And we have families that have, you know, moved around Shreveport, you know, they're not just in Cedar Grove anymore, but they consider themselves Cedar Grove. So a lot of folks come back and drive back or take the bus back or, you know, they come as groups, as families.
So we have a service, we have a meal, we have a pantry.
Yes.
Anything else that's part of
a We have had a clothes closet in the past, but it just became so overwhelming. But with that being said, if someone has a need, we can hook them up. You know, and it's just a place where folks get to, we're so relational. Everything that we do, we know their name. We know something about, there's some connection that we figure out, you know, and then with that, after you see folks for so long, it's, well, how are you doing? How's that leg doing? You know, how's your aunt doing? You know, because people want to talk about that. They want to talk. And so you find out things about each other and that continues on. And then, so the next week I might have a bag of something that I know that they, you know, had mentioned the week before or a coat that someone needed.
And I've already confessed to y'all, I'm going to confess on air, I'm embarrassed to say this, I've never been to Common Ground, but I'm going to do something about that very soon. But for people who are in my situation who've yet to be exposed to Common Ground, is your suggestion for their first time to be a Thursday night?
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, you know, I could call and if it's a group, we like for groups to call and say, hey, we want to bring our group just so we're not on top of each other. But otherwise, show up. I tell people all the time, you're having a bad day, come to Common Ground on Thursday night. I believe that 1,000,000%. Because it's just a place you can drop by. You might get there on a night that we have a lot of volunteers and you feel kind of awkward. You're going to feel awkward no matter what, you know. Now, you could just come and just hang out, you know. But also, there is that factor of if you're really wanting to serve and do a job, it's there as well. But there might be nights that it's already taken up that space. You know, someone's already doing that job. Otherwise, just come. Just come.
And just to clarify, I mean, this is the way I heard it. When you say awkward, it's more what Matt was saying too, which is you're just going to be out of your comfort zone.
100%. It's just not something you do every day.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people, you know what, my awkwardness, where I felt awkward, I should say, at first is I had the heart to serve, but I didn't want to feel so different than the folks I was alongside with, you know, I wanted for that to come across. I wasn't there to help them. You know, I just wanted to be a friend. And with that comes so much more. And that's where our lives changed, you know, was what happens after that relationship is not just the act of we were serving up a meal or washing the dishes, you know.
So let's pause there. My next question is either of you can talk to this, but tell me about 2 to 3 of Common Ground's other programs in addition to what takes place on a Thursday night.
I'm gonna do that.
Well, you know, of course, our youth program, which is, you know, a
Yeah, tell me about that.
It's a lot. We, kind of going back to the beginning, after visiting and meeting people at the Thursday night meal, the one thing that I couldn't figure out, there were no teenage boys, you know, coming up to Common Ground. And I knew that they were all over the place because riding around, you saw teenagers at the time. You don't see it as much anymore because of the shooting. People aren't out on the street like they were. But in those days, you could not go down a block without seeing several kids. So I said, why won't they come? And so I kind of started riding around a little more intentionally to see what the kids were doing. And of course, they were all playing basketball out on the street on these broken down goals with balls with no air and so on and so forth. And I said, well, that's it. We need to give them a place to play basketball and invite these kids up here. And we didn't know it, but there was a parking lot buried under about 2 feet mm-hmm. of soil and grass and trees. It had just been abandoned for so long. And Lisa Cronin, our CEO, said, well, Matt, it's there. If you can get it uncovered, you can use it for a basketball court. So we started, working on it, every weekend a little bit. And finally, the concrete started showing up, and kids would walk by on the way to the store and say, what are y'all doing? And I said, I'm building you a basketball court. And by the time we were most of the way through, the kids were helping us. And we had a ready-made team of kids, by the time we had the goals up. And
portable goals.
One of the most remarkable stories about that, though, and I will tell you, and it's more going along with faith, is, about the time that I was, clearing off the basketball court, and that was a monumental amount of work just in itself. We actually had to cut down trees with, power saws, and it just seemed like we would never get there. And it was about that point that I said, I've got in over my head. Who am I to think that I could come over here and make a difference? I could actually fix something, which, I think it's just a human thing. You can't approach something like that without bringing your ego. And I'm no different than anyone else, maybe a little bit more so, with the ego thing. And it was at that moment when I realized that there was no way for me to do this. I had to make a decision inside the privacy of my mind, because I knew I really needed to go home. And I said, no, I'm just going to keep on going forward and trust that God is going to bail me out of this somehow. And the very next, Saturday that I showed up, this guy walked, there was a little trail through the woods, and he walked up, introduced himself and said, hi, my name's Chuck Taylor. And I grew up in this little house right over here, and I've been in Texas, but I came back and I heard what you're doing, and I want to help you out. And that was the last day that I was alone, because, God sent the man to make it work. It wasn't me. It never was going to be me. It was going to be Chuck Taylor. He's black. He grew up in very, very difficult circumstances and somehow overcame it. And he's just the perfect man. At the time that he came on, he was working 2 straight shifts at a convenience store. He would go in at 3:00 in the afternoon and work 2 straight shifts until 7:00 the next morning. He would walk from the store straight up to where I was, picking up the kids, and we'd get there, and he would spend all day with us and just go right back to work.
And take a nap in your truck.
And it went on and on and on until finally I said, we've got to get you a better job, Chuck. So I talked to a friend of mine Mike Boggs, who had car washes and things. I said, I want you to give Chuck a job so he has more stable hours. And Chuck's just such a great guy. He just quickly advanced up in there, and I lost him. And I had to call Mike back and say, can I have Chuck back? And it was at that point that Common Ground actually hired Chuck into the position of the youth liaison. And, you know, when we say we're youth directors, we support Chuck Taylor. And we basically make things happen so he can work his magic with those kids. And I could just talk forever about his amazing story. He's remarkable, just a remarkable person. The way he's brought himself up from adversity, he's now married, has his own two children, is the absolute best father in the history of the world. He really is, and still is today. And he's a godly man, and he is with these kids all the time. And they love him dearly. And he affects the outcome of these children's lives, you know,
and
as they grow up.
Talk to me a little bit about that interaction. So the court, let's fast forward a little bit. The court is ready, finally, and we have some of the teenage boys starting to use it.
Right.
Talk to me, paint a picture ages, a little bit of about what is now wrapped around them or what is now happening with the teenage boys in the neighborhood.
This was 2014 when we started playing on the concrete in the parking lot, and we had 10 kids that could really hoop. Mm-hmm. I mean, they came ready made because these kids just grew up out on the street playing, so they were pretty talented, and most of these children came from really really tough backgrounds, you know, a lot of adversity. And so they were more than, you know, happy to be up there, and the fellowship was just tremendous. We started off just by letting them, on the street, the game is 4-on-4, and it's a make it, take it type thing. So if you make a goal, you get the ball back, and so on and so forth. So we played the street version of 4-on-4, from about 8 in the morning till about 5 in the afternoon. The kids would have...
On Saturday.
Yes, we on were Saturday. Told, yeah, that's we where
were,
we started.
We were just giving up Saturday then. Yeah.
And take a little break. Vicky would always, you know, make sandwiches for the kids. We'd stop and do a little Bible study. A lot of times the kids would just sit around and talk and just crack on each other.
Dance
a lot. We'd have our little boombox out there, and the kids.
And initially, there's no communication necessarily between Saturdays. You're showing up on a Saturday, and they know you're coming, it's happening kind of organically.
We convinced them to come on Thursdays to eat the meal.
Okay.
They started coming on Thursdays and hanging out a little bit more. They would come eat the meal.
Yeah.
So we convinced, but that was it.
Sometimes kids would walk by, and we would never turn anyone down. So even if, you know, an adult came by and wanted to play, you know, they wouldn't stay very long, but but we'd let anybody play. But the core was these kids, and the fellowship was just phenomenal. The kids were then and always have been so appreciative, so loving, and just so happy. You know, it is an unbelievable experience, you know, to be with Chuck and these kids. Boy, it was especially in that raw environment there. It's just, you felt God everywhere.
The ages
just so
were like,
much love.
The ages were, Fat Daddy was eight.
Yeah, we had an 8-year old. He was the youngest because he was a sibling.
Yeah. And all the way up to 15.
That's how we started.
Right, right. So,
So the kids then said, you know, we want to actually make a team. We want to play, you know, in the city league. And so we weren't even thinking about that.
We didn't know.
But we said, well, okay, we'll do that. And so a friend of mine bought us, you know, some some t-shirts. We started off with just Cedar Grove Charger. That's what they decided they wanted their name to be, Cedar Grove Chargers. And so a friend of mine, Ken Gillum, bought the t-shirts for us, gifted it to us, and we got some shorts with them. So that was our first uniforms. We were
embarrassed,
kind of pitiful looking, next to everyone else out there with their nice uniforms.
And we had so many ages on that one team, we had to play up because there were so many ages, but that was okay. We made it.
And when y'all say City League, we're talking about Spar.
Spar.
And back in those days, they had some different rules. They don't do this anymore. But in those days, you'd had to play one quarter with your starting lineup. And then you had to empty your bench until everybody had played. So at one point, we would have an eight-year-old out there. So our starting five were super good. And we'd build a lead, and then we'd completely lose it. And it was quite an adventure, but the kids always had good. And very first year, we made it, to the championship, and we didn't win because of the eight-year-old factor. You know, our first starting five could hang with just about anybody. And, the sad thing about it is, those kids being so good, and only out of that group, only one kid played high school ball. They just couldn't function.
That's the driving. I think that's been our driving force. You know, because we have two boys of our own, and we've always been in sports, and we supported other people's kids in sports. So we knew what after school was like. You know, it was always so busy and everything, and that's what just broke our heart. So many of these kids in that area. You know, sports is difficult. Much like school is one thing, school sports, you got to have the grades and you have to have the attitude that matches everything. Right. And so many of these boys, that was an obstacle for them. And so that's what we really wanted to provide, is a safe space to, not that they could treat us anyway, but that, and we didn't have any problem with that. It just, we were trying to teach them how you can do this, so maybe that they could go on and play, sports for their school. And of course, we spoke about education, but sometimes that's just a really difficult hurdle for some of them.
So. And what the main thing that we were doing was just learning. We didn't come in at that point with an attitude of trying to fix these boys. That's a very naive, starting point. You have to understand a lot of these kids. In these dire circumstances, you can't make a broad statement like every child in Cedar Grove is like this, but these kids, for the most part, started off malnourished, neglected, and to give you an example, whereas most children would have, a size 11 shoe size, we were buying shoes for size 6, little children. So it's an obvious sign of severe malnourishment at that childhood level. And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't take into consideration is childhood stunting. And that also goes, for your brain as well. And so a lot of our kids were so far behind the curve in school that it was just going to be a tremendous challenge to get a high school degree. And then, of course, you talk about all the adverse, traumatic incidences in the life, which is an everyday occurrence. And we would listen to our kids, and they would talk about so-and-so getting, jumped. And we'd say, why? There was never a reason. So as a child, you grew up in that neighborhood knowing that if you walked down the street, that five guys might just beat you up badly just because you're walking down the street and they don't know you or don't like you for no particular reason. And all of these kids grew up in that atmosphere.
I'm gonna shift y'all for a sec, just because there's so much I want to cover there's with you. But this this next question is super long, so hang in there with me for a second. But a couple of years ago, we had Clay Walker on this podcast, and at the time, he was director of juvenile services for Caddo Parish. I'm sure y'all know Clay. He explained to us that the number one factor for the 66 kids who were repeat offenders in detention was that they did not have a single pro-social adult in their life. Not a parent, not a grandparent, not an aunt, not an uncle, not a principal, not a teacher, not a coach, not a pastor, not a mentor. I know that mentoring is such an important aspect for the kids you serve through Common Ground. For those listening to this and thinking, I really want to get more involved in strengthening my community, tell me above and beyond what we've already discussed about the type of mentoring activities that are available.
Well, we, as far as the basketball, that was just our hook. You know, and that was spending all the time until one of the boys, we were taking him home. And at the time, we just had our truck and my Yukon just full with, you know, it just, everything started getting more and more bodies. And we were, I was in the front seat with Matt and one of the boys, and he said, I just wish we could do this more. And we just went, yeah, okay. So we started adding a day and adding a day until you realize how many kids want to do this. And you say, well, we got to add another day, another day, and another day. So that then you start realizing you hear these stories that he's talking about. And you say, well, what can we do about that? What can we help them with? It looks like they need help with homework. So we started saying, let's all hang out together. We'll pick you up in the afternoon. So that led to us picking them up to help them with homework, you know.
At schools.
We would go pick them up at schools. We would all divide and conquer. We'd just go to all different schools, all of our feeder schools. And we Common Ground was already serving with Atkins Elementary, doing tutoring with them. So we were going a little bit above that that last age group on into the junior high and high schools. So we spent our time picking kids up and tutoring and just, you know, just going over some of their stuff. No one has homework, right? So, you know, we just kind of went over some basic things and then found out, you know, we need socks, we need shoes, we're hungry, my dad's not able to work, you know, let's find. It just kept adding up one thing after another. So as far as saying to anyone that would want to know what is that like to be a mentor, it can be as simple as just being a friend. I tell people all the time, you don't have to be as crazy as we are, because it's all the time for us now. It has completely consumed our lives. But it is as simple as just befriending one of these kids and finding out, coming to one of their games. I sat in those stands for years. I have been by myself in those gyms by myself, you know, and sometimes I was a little angry about it because I would watch these other teams that we were playing, you know, and they would have all their fans with their outfits. And I mean, I did that with my kids. Why was I angry about that? You know, so, but I just thought to myself, gosh, I wish I had more people that would come just watch these boys play ball and clap and tell them how cute they are and how fun they are. And we're so proud of you, you know? And so it's just as simple as that without expecting anything back. I think that's, if I had to say anything to anyone looking to be a mentor, it's to not expect anything back, because it's a pretty tough, it can be, because kids are not ready made for that.
This is kind of a stupid question, but it's on my head, my mind, so I'm asking anyway. I mean, you guys have clearly proven yourself in this neighborhood. The nonprofit's proven itself.
Oh, yes.
You know, is there a, do you get to a point where, all right, we've established ourselves so much that everyone's going to trust us? Like we're trusted now, or is this a day by day, person by person type endeavor? Does that question make sense?
Yes.
Community-wise, we are trusted. And I think that is evidenced by the fact that, you know, Common Ground is never defaced, broken into. There are, you know, relatively few shootings right there, you know, at Common Ground. On the other hand, folks move around so much. because you know they don't, a lot of folks don't really have enough money to afford their rent, and they'll get just one event will cause them to have to move. They can't make rent. Yeah. And so people are in and out, in and out, and you just have to learn new faces, you know, over and over again. So, you know, there is a, you know, always there are new people to develop trust with. But, you know, the folks that we've known, yes, they definitely trust us.
But we have to, I mean, we have an upwards of 40 boys all the time. And so there's always, like you said, a new family. So a mom, you know, we used to just ride around and say, hey, you want to play basketball? And they jump on the truck and come with us, you know. But, you know, we do have to follow some guidelines. We do. Yeah. We do. We ask permission now. We have someone make a note that, you know, I mean, a permission slip that because we take the kids and we don't take them home till bedtime. So they stay with us. They do their homework with us. They eat a snack right after school. We practice somewhere. We do something. We do yoga now. We go on field trips. We're with them until bedtime, and then we feed them another meal and take them home. So you know, there's a lot of trust in that because. Yeah. But I feel like he drives the same truck that he started with from the very beginning. We're going to always drive that truck because babies know that truck, you know, it's like, so, we feel good in that, but then I still feel that, you know, what you were asking about that anxiety or the awkwardness maybe is the better word. I still feel that. I mean, I don't think that ever goes away because I think it keeps you in check of saying, you know, who am I? What am I doing here? I just want you to know I'm just here to be, let's just hang, you know, and let's figure this out. So if I ever could impart something on anyone that's coming to serve, and it's two things. One thing is that you're going to feel a little awkwardness and it's going to be different and we're going to figure that out and you'll ease into that. And the other thing is, you don't have to do what we do. I have so many people that will come to us and say that will just come volunteer with us, especially with our program. See, there's so many things you can do at Common Ground. We have all kinds of programs, but with us, it's a little extreme. And we still have people that fall in love with it, you know, and they'll say, I'm coming back tomorrow night and Thursday night and Friday and Saturday. And I'll go, no, baby, no, you're not. No, you're not because you've got a little family at the house or you're a college student. I want you to go back to the dorm and I want you to do your stuff. But don't forget us. You know, that's what I try to tell people because people will go away and life will happen and they'll forget and oh shoot. And then they'll be scared to come back. You know, oh, I told y'all, but you know, so I wish everybody could feel just any little thing, any time that they could come spend. We have some people that just pop in and out and it's just so beautiful, you know, when someone just shows up. Yeah. So.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful.
I think so too.
I think everyone struggles with both of those things.
Exactly.
Yeah. And y'all have hit this a little bit, but you know, volunteering is all about giving back. But often what happens during volunteering is we actually gain more educationally and or emotionally than the people we're assisting.
Wow.
Well, my question for y'all is, will each of you, you choose the order, will each of you share a story of a preconception you had or a gap in understanding or awareness that you had that has been changed because of all your time working with Common Ground? And that's my last formal question. We'll come back after that and anything else you want to discuss. But
you know, I relate again, you know, my motivation, you know, for going to Common Ground in the first place was my own personal, you know, search for God. I've been in church for, like, as I said, since I was 17 years old. And yet I would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, you know, what am I doing? You know, and, you know, do I really believe in God? If I believe in God, shouldn't I be doing something more? And I go back to what Jesus said in the Bible, said, you must be reborn. And when you say that, I'm a completely different person. I am simply not the same human being that I was before. I've changed so much. Everything has changed about us. And it's really hard for me to say this without it sounding like I'm saying that Vicki and I are something special, because we started off on Saturdays and then we added a day and another day. And we, you know, I still work. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning so that I can get my work done so we can pick up kids at 3, and we get through at about 10 o'clock at night, and that's every night. We have no life other than this. And so many people think that we're just the strangest, you know, folks in the entire world, and we never feel burdened by what we're doing. It's just so joyful being with these kids and seeing the fellowship and them saying, I don't want to go home. Like, can we just stay a little while longer? And so, you know, what people look at us and say, well, you know, as a matter of fact, somebody in the church, you know, asked us the other day, when are y'all going to stop? Are you ever going to retire and just take some time for yourself? And the answer is no. You know, this is what we're going to do until we just physically can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're doing it is because we have literally found God. We found that kingdom of God that Jesus said that, you know, it's all around you. You just don't see it. Well, we see it now. And that's why we're there all the time.
Even through the heartache. I mean, it's not...
A lot of heartache.
It's not funny, you know. It's always pretty much fun. It really is. Just being with kids is fun. But there's a lot of sadness. And in fact, a little story, just last week, Matt and I were together when we dropped off the last group, and we weren't speaking. And I knew what that meant, because we didn't start chatting. You know, it just, both of us were quiet. And so I was just staring out the window. And of course, he knows I'm dropping a tear here and there. And he said, I know, we're never going to get tough, are we? You know, because we just dropped off a kid in a situation we didn't really, I mean, not that anyone, you know, could help. I'm not blaming anyone for the situation. It just seemed kind of hopeless, you know, and he seemed sad. And it just, those kind of things happen a lot, you know. And Matt said, and I thought, you're right. I guess we're never going to get used to that. I'm glad we're not used to that. Yeah. You know, I'm glad that we're not hardened and, you know, that we do have a renewed feeling about going and seeing what we can help with. Because we cannot fix this. And that's what I tell, people ask us all the time. I love this answer that Matt gives. People ask us, oh, well, do you see a change? Because folks want to know that we've given up everything, you know, all this. They want to see, okay, so what, you see everybody changing over there? And we're like, Matt always says, oh yeah, there's a big change, and it's me, you know, we're the ones that have changed, you know, and we're like, yeah, that's, you know, I mean, yes, there's a change in anyone that you're, when you're doting on them and having fun and giving them, you know, attention, and just like every child should have, you know, but we love the adults too. And they're just some situations that have just gotten out of hand. That's just all there is to it. So there's no blame in any of that, because that can happen to any of us, you know.
I think that the biggest change in my worldview, and I wish I could download what I know about this into everyone else's brain, because it's such a difficult concept to understand. So many people feel as though in a poor black community like Cedar Grove, that there are options, you know, for folks. And when you've witnessed a life, you know, from birth into adulthood and all the things that go with it, and you realize that that person's mother, father, it was the same thing, and their mother and father, it was the same thing, you realize, you know, there was no chance. There was never a chance from birth. And one of the things that I feel like, and Vicki agrees, that, and I know this is a dark thing to say, but it's just a real emotion that sometimes with some of these kids, we feel like we're operating a hospice. Because as soon as they reach adulthood, life is over. And there's just, there are no options. And you say, oh, yes, they could. They could get a job. Well, that goes all the way back full circle. You think, yeah, if it were you and I with our parents, with our upbringing, and all the times we fell down and you were told to get up and to be strong and you were encouraged and so on and so forth, well, these folks never had any of that. They have no discipline because they were never nurtured and they have no resilience. And so they get to adulthood, and so many times they pick up a gun. In a lot of ways, you don't see suicide in the Black community, but especially with these young males, it's just a very slow process of suicide, saying, I really don't care if I die. I'm picking up this gun. We're going to do these things. I know what the consequences are, and I don't care. And that's been a lot of our kids that we've had. We've had kids come in and out, and kids that we have loved so dearly, and they're gone, you know. We have kids who have killed, and they're in jail for the rest of their life. And if I understand, you know, our oldest son worked, you know, in criminal defense, you know, for a period of time, and we would quite often talk about some of his clients, and you get it from a different perspective of, you know, young adults going through the legal system and how they're viewed, you know, by the court. And if folks could only know, I mean, you still have to put a killer in jail. I'd understand that. But if you could know what I know, you would still, your heart would just cry with compassion about all of these young men who are committing horrible crimes. And it's just something that you have to experience. And that is in the biggest way I think that both of us have changed. Is, you know, just having a little bit more of an understanding of what these folks are up against in life. Yeah. And it's more than you can comprehend. It's more than somebody, you could write a book and you could read it and you still wouldn't be able to understand the entirety of it.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back just to one thing you said earlier, because I'm curious what you have to say about that. I forget the exact verb you used, but you said maybe people in the neighborhood come to you a lot and say, you know, is this fixed or is this changed?
Right.
Like, I know it's not fixed, but would you, if someone said, are you not for yourselves, but for this, for these boys or for these families or for this community, if someone said to you, are you making a difference? How would you respond to that?
Absolutely.
100%.
We can't always, we can't always save every kid. And this goes again back to your question about mentorship and what you related that Clay Walker said. We have a lot of kids, and so we can't be one-on-one with these kids, you know, very, very much. And even Chuck, and Chuck will stay up all night, you know, on chat groups with these kids. If anybody calls, it just doesn't matter. He's on call all the time, and it's still not the same. Our kids, if we ever bring in another kid, our kids will say, don't bring him in. They want to keep us, you know, for themselves. And so if you keep on going with that, a kid really wants one person for himself or herself, just somebody to say, you matter to me. And that makes the most difference. You know, our kids that have gotten in trouble are the ones that have gotten older and they start, you know, getting out, getting girlfriends, having children and things like that. So they separate themselves, and then all of a sudden one incident will end their life because of the trauma they've experienced. It's hard to control impulses. Yeah. And that's generally what happens, is just that instant impulse. And somebody, well, either they wind up dead or someone else winds up dead. And it is entirely out of their control. That's a whole other issue.
Well, we could talk about all of this forever. But one thing I was going to tell you about, a little story that happened the other night. Lindsay Martin, she had WellFed. I don't know if you know Lindsay. She does our yoga, and that's our little, we call her our little boys, and they're junior high. They're sixth grade to ninth grade. And so we do yoga, and, you know, that yoga brings on a lot of feelings. And she'll have a circle time before that, and she'll make them say a high and a low, you know. And so she's had to talk them into that, you know. So we were just chatting, and it's usually, I'm not doing good in science, you know, that's usually our low, you know, and all this stuff. And so our high is I'm getting to be here, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, in walks this guy, big old guy walks in, and I realize who it is, and it was one of our original Cedar Grove Chargers that walked onto that pavement court, you know. And he said, I just had to come. I saw the light on. And he said, I had to come in here. He said, I was driving down the road to get my little sister. I don't even live here anymore. But he said, I said, what? They're in that gym, which that didn't used to be a gym. It used to be a sanctuary, but we raised funds to make it into a little half court. And he said, and he knew that. And he said, they want to go tell those boys they're there because of me. You know, and so he came in there, and I hadn't thought about that. You know, he was so puffed up and proud. He said, I just want y'all to know how this all started. And he told them, you know, about walking onto that court, and he told them. And I just thought, I didn't even think about how proud this is making some of the, I mean, I felt kind of bad about it, because I was like, look what we did. You know, we've got this now. You know, look how slick we are. And it's them that did that, you know. It was their needs. And so he was just so puffed up and proud and telling them all what he did and how he did that game and this game and, you know, and just that they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's so true.
Now, a lot of that age group are adults now, and they still come play.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times they'll bring their kids up, and we'll hold them, and they'll play. And
a new role.
It is, and they're you know, working, taking care of their children. And I guess our best success story for a child has been, again, going back to Lindsay Martin and her husband, Danny.
They kind of fell into the mentorship for us.
Right.
They were one of those mentors that walked up and said, hey, what can we do? And we accidentally threw them a kid.
Yeah, so we threw them one kid, and started off just this young man worked at WellFed. You know, Lindsay wanted to teach kids, you know, how to work and do stuff like that. So, of course, and you probably need to have them on your podcast, because they let him move in. He had a very tough time at home, and there was one kid, then another, and then another. One of our kids, we call him Baby Jay. His name is Jalen, and I always said, Baby Jay's going to be good whether he has us or not. He's just a real smart kid, and very quiet, and made good grades in school. Well,
against all odds, we followed his mom around Bossier, Shreveport, way out Shreveport, way out Bossier. We went, I can't tell you how many schools we went to find him, because we just couldn't let him go, you know. And so,
and in spite of him changing schools two or three times a year, he still made his grades. And so Lindsay and Danny allowed him to move in. They picked up on how good he was academically. And they started to challenge him, you know, what do you want to do with your life? And the topic of military came up. Well, you have to know Danny and Lindsay. And they said, well, okay. And they got him into West Point. And he's about to graduate right now from West Point
Those
Academy.
Those original boys from...
That's an
East.
It's an amazing 70th. Story.
Yes.
Couldn't have been done, though, without Danny and Lindsay. And that's where it comes to that one-on-one. It takes beyond what we're we're doing, yes, I believe, you know, we've had an effect on all the children that have grown up in our program, but there is that step that Clay Walker mentioned, that the kids, and that's where, you know, for anyone hearing this, and it could come down to, you don't have to let them move in like Danny and Lindsay, you know, did, although, you know, a lot of kids would be happy to do that. but it's just staying in touch, visiting, taking a kid to lunch, picking them up from school, just always letting them know, you know, I'm your guy or I'm your girl, you know, whatever you need. You need shoes, you need clothes, you need a tutor, you know, how are you doing? And then sometimes a little bit of tough love. It's always, you know, any type of mentoring requires tough love as well. But that is a part that would, I can promise you, for all the kids that we have had that are deceased or in prison, that's the one thing that would have changed that outcome. And we can't be with every, we can't be with every kid all the time. We have to drop them back off at home because we have too many kids.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, as I told you, those are my formal questions. But if there's, is there anything that is super important to you that you want to say or share? You do have all the time that you'd like.
We talked a lot.
This was amazing.
That's
amazing. You're doing amazing work. I mean, I'm so moved hearing your story. I so appreciate you taking the time to share it.
It's hard for us to hear that kind of, it's just every day for us, and it's so fulfilling for us. So it's hard for us to take a compliment. Does that make sense? Because we don't think about it. It just, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of tough times.
You deserve
it. No, it just is. And yeah. We really, it gets a little chaotic. And that's, I will say this. I mean, again, probably someone else should be here to talk about Common Ground, even though we completely represent Common Ground. And I do all, I cook for summer camp. I do whatever it takes. We both do. He set the sanctuary up this morning for service tonight. I mean, we do everything. We have high set classes. There's so much going on there. But with that being said, I feel like it's being a mentor for us. That I'm not talking about a volunteer for Common Ground, but in a kid's life, I think is it. You need to have kind of a chaotic spirit. Does that make sense? Because we're pretty laid back until we're not, you know. And there's a lot of folks that I have had come. I'm kind of protective of our kids, I guess I should say, because people, you know, they're more concerned with the pants being up and the words being correct and the language being on point. And we're just not that concerned with that, because all that comes. That comes. It really does. It really, once they come along and they're like, oh, they call me Mama Vicky. And so they're like, oh, sorry, Mama Vicky. I mean, that right there, you know, whoops, you know. And so people being around that environment, it's a little chaotic. It's a very chaotic because we like that. I want a kid to come in from school and relax, take his shoes off and, you know, have a snack and, you know, be themselves,
yeah.
Just like our kids were. You know, just like, you know, just hanging out and get to say something silly and I go, oh my gosh, you know, all that, you know. So it's not for the person that likes everything neat and tidy, you know, because sometimes we spend a long time in that kitchen eating a bowl of cereal or, you know, or some fruit or something. And we don't get to the homework until later just because I feel like we need to be sitting there just doing that, you know. And so somebody that's really on a structured time frame sometimes doesn't, you know, that's not a good fit, you know. But otherwise, folks, after they see them and they hear their spirit, it moves a lot of people. But again, there's a lot of other things at Common Ground that fit some of those boxes.
Well, I'm working on Lisa. I'm going to get her on.
She is truly an amazing individual.
We could not do this because even though we have always somebody said, you've always been crazy like this. But, you know, we've always volunteered. We've always done things in wherever we live. But this platform, Lisa set it up. I mean, she wasn't the original person, but boy, she got it in line. And being a volunteer herself, you know, that's a whole nother spirit, you know. And so she's, we don't have to worry about things. It's not like we worry about paperwork. I mean, she chases us with paperwork. And at the beginning, when we were throwing kids in every orifice of our vehicle, she was going, oh my gosh, because she's an attorney, you know. And she was like, what are y'all doing now? And we're like, you don't need to know. We're going to the fair, though. And she's like, oh, you're taking those people to the fair. What are they going to do? You know, so it was pretty rough at the beginning for her, I'm sure. But boy, there's so much has happened at Common Ground. It's unbelievable how many lives are touched. And just folks that we give out emergency bags every day. People don't want to ask for that. You know, I mean, that need an emergency food bag. You know, it's like, I don't know. It just, that has to be hard to come and say, hey, I need something like this, you know. And so we have so many great people, staff that are, you know, that greet you at the door. They're like, get in here, you know. And I'm so humbled and thankful for that. And a lot of those folks grew up in that neighborhood, you know. So there are so many different aspects of Common Ground. We just really talk a lot about this part, about the youth group, but we couldn't do it without the other folks that are propping us up, because we're not good at all that other stuff. We can stay up and talk, and I can make a lot of grilled cheese sandwiches. But, but as far as, you know, paperwork and stats and knowing what grants need to be written, no, we're not very good at that. Yeah. We're just good at loving on kids. So I think...
And, you know, if you think about it, Lisa spends, you know, as much time as we do on Common Ground, and it's all just grunt work.
Yeah.
It's all the stuff that we don't want to do.
Yeah.
And yet she does it.
Yeah.
Obviously, lots of admiration from the two of us, you know, for her.
We get to do this.
Yeah.
And I won't compliment y'all anymore, but lots of admiration for you. And all I'll say is thank you.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.